Hotel on the Mountain by James Baldwin, Part 1. Taking place in Harlem, New York in 1935, we are introduced to the Grimes family. And our main character will be John, a boy who's extremely uncomfortable in his own skin. So one of the things that we have to look at and analyze is, why is that? What factors are contributing to this boy having these feelings? And it really starts off with the opening passages of the text, where it's established that people are pushing and directing him towards one path in life. He is to be a preacher like his father. His father is a deacon. His father has a job outside of his religious obligations. But the job he's most known for, all the way dating back to his time in the South and now in New York, has been as a preacher. And people believe John is going to follow in his footsteps. Later in this first part, we also get a very detailed description of sort of the idea of how to make it to heaven, with this concept that there's a narrow way to heaven. And I do think these two things are connected in many ways, that John feels that he's being pushed in this one direction, a very narrow path in life. And this narrow path in life in many ways mirrors this concept that there's a narrow path to heaven. Anything that falls outside of this expectation is really truly sin. Everything, absolutely everything. And John's struggling with this. He is just a boy. And he's got this very complicated relationship with his father, who we later find out in the text, which we won't necessarily go over in-depthly, but we'll go over the entirety of the plot, is actually not his biological father, which makes this entire relationship more complicated. So when we meet John and we see everything he's going through and how uncomfortable he is within his own skin, and that he's desperately seeking another life, and he does not want to be fed into this world of the religious community, but he doesn't see a way out of it. We also are dealing with a boy who has such a complex relationship with the church that is defining every aspect of his decision making. He is someone who has a role model in the character of Elijah, who is also in many ways a crush. And as John's dealing with these very mixed feelings with no support network, feeling dirty about anything that's related to sexuality, that he does not know who he is and how to define himself in a world where most of the things he's dealing with fall under, in his mind, because of the way he's being raised, almost in an unspeakable category. He's a boy who feels uncomfortable in who he is. He dreams of being something very different. But ultimately, when we think about this in a big picture way, he wants to belong. And he wants to be important, and he wants to be liked. And all of this feeds into his insecurities about how he looks. He does not have an athletic background, it's mentioned, but he has this power that comes from his mind. And because he has this power from his intellect, it's his superpower. It's his secret weapon. It's a thing that gives him a sense of purpose in a world where he feels very lost. It's his one thing that he can rely on. But everything that kind of falls outside of this path that he's being sent to is centered around this idea of sin and filth. And it's not by accident that James Baldwin portrays the house that the family lives in as filthy, no matter how much they try to clean it. And while the house might not actually be filthy, and the family's obviously doing their best to manage a home, we get this idea that no amount of cleaning will ever be enough to make it feel clean. It will always be filthy to John. So you have to ask yourself, why is John having these feelings? Why does John believe that this is the destiny that his family is going to always be in? Or why is this situation never changeable? It's just forever. It's a constant. So part of this is the understanding of the relationships of the characters themselves. Some of it is the geography of where they are and what's going on in the world during this time period, which we'll talk about. But John is still in a predominantly black community in New York during this time period. Racism is still very, very present holistically outside of their community, and not very far outside their doors. There is a sense of fear looming throughout the entirety of the chapter, both from John himself and the characters and their relationship to John. The comments that dad beats you because he loves you, and that his mother only sees the world in churches and jails, and that John must follow his father's not just path in life, but his leadership, because if not, he'll end up in jail. And John pointing out the fact there's more to life than just churches and jails, but this is the life and the way they are seeing not just the culture that they are in, but the society that they're in. That then these thoughts are not unfounded. That the two options for John are to be within the church or to go to jail. And this is a lot for a young man. And his mom points out when asking whether or not her husband, the boy's father, or stepfather in this case, behind the scenes, is he a good man? It goes back to this idea that a man is defined by prayer, not by his actions. And that's one thing that we got to remember here, that we have John in a lot of this is taking place in his head. He's not acting really on anything because he's being driven to inaction by his religious beliefs. He's being driven to inaction by feeling that every step he takes is sin, is filth, is wrong. And he goes back to this concept that his father, while prayer is at the centerpiece of what defines a man according to his mother, he looks at his father and he sees all the horrible behaviors that he continues and consistently puts forth. And he does ask himself, which is, I think, an existential question that is interesting to consider, is that his father was married before and his first wife died and then he married John's mother. And John thinks a lot about this first woman, this idea that had she continued to exist, he would not exist, which is a lot. It's a heavy, heavy question for a boy who's trying to figure out himself. This idea that had this other person not died, he would not exist. And where does he put himself? What does that do? What does it say about his life? Is it meaningful? Is it not meaningful? Is he putting too much emphasis on it? Is he not putting enough emphasis on it? And he's unsure about his relationship to others. Number one, how does he relate to other people? He struggles with it. Everyone else seems to sort of be able to flow or go with the flow. And he seems desperately lost because he does not have a sense of belonging. And while the rest of the family seems to be at least on the surface committed to the church being the glue, he's rejecting that feeling. Or at least not wanting it to be the essential part of who he is as a person. And he fears not being noticed. He fears fading into basically oblivion of life. Fading into the oblivion of life, just sort of being completely not present. It's one of the reasons why when he gets his birthday money and he goes to the store, he does not go into all the stores because he's the ones that are more crowded, he feels like he won't be noticed. And in so many ways, the joys and pleasures in life, when he goes to the movies and makes his movie pick and everything that goes on, it seems like anything that is happy, anything that's joyful, anything that's bringing pleasure, in his mind seems to be directly connected to sin. And there's very little compromise in that way. If there's pleasure, if there's enjoyment, does not really understand himself outside of having this relationship centered around the church, and the church is sort of reinforcing these views. If he's misinterpreting these feelings, these lessons, then it's still impacting his life. So if the argument is, well, he's taking this the wrong way, that could be true. Regardless of it, that is how he's interpreting it. That is how he's choosing to implement these stories, these lessons. This is the role that religion is playing in his life. So by the time we get to the end of part one, and Roy, his younger brother, gets cut by a knife. And Roy, which is a whole other thing we'll talk about in class, Roy has gone looking for a fight. And he gets in a fight with some white boys, and he's ultimately cut with a knife. And the father really, really overreacts. And we'll look at it, we'll pull up the scene in class, we'll look at it in-depthly. And the son is cut. And we do know that Roy is John's stepfather's biological father. But he's treating Roy in a way that he was almost murdered by these boys. And John's stepfather, father for sake of the argument, aunt is there with his aunt, Aunt Florence, who is John's dad's sister, to keep the story straight. And she's sort of calling him out on a lot of his behaviors. She kind of feels like John's dad's being dramatic. And his name's Gabriel. She keeps pointing out that, Gabriel, you were like Roy when you were a boy, and this is something you gotta kind of relax. And he won't relax. And he starts blaming his wife for letting Roy be wild. And Aunt Florence, who is still Gabriel's sister, says, you were just like this as a child too. There was no controlling you. And while all this is going on, John is holding his baby sister, Ruth. And he says, when you get old enough, you need to leave. And he's giving her this advice. Now, she's an infant and she's not going to remember any of this. But I think it's a very powerful scene because we have the adults talking through their memories. We have the adults talking about the present and the past in sort of the same non-linear way. And in that moment, we have John speaking to a baby about, this home is toxic, basically. And because it's toxic, you need to leave it the first chance you get. This scene ends more or less with John's father, or stepfather, we'll call him Gabriel so I can stop fumbling over the names here. Gabriel striking his wife, and Roy standing up to his father saying, if you do that again, I will kill you. At that point, Gabriel then decides to whip Roy, even after they've been taking care of him for a lot of this entire section after this knife wound, and he gets whipped. And it's a horrible scene. And while this is going on, there is a sense that Gabriel is completely unhinged. And he's doing this in many ways, not for himself, but because he believes that there's a connection between this way of parenting and the salvation and the safety of his children. And I do think there is an argument there that he's not necessarily wrong, but he's going about it in a horrible way. Striking his wife is completely uncalled for. Savagely beating Roy, uncalled for. But the mentality of having to be overprotective of your family unit during the 1930s in Harlem, New York, for a variety of reasons, there is some good intent there. But the execution is horrifically off. And for a man who's trying to protect his family, which you could say definitely that's coming from a place of love, is mainly coming from a place of fear. And there's no love ultimately being felt, even when he's sort of taking care of Roy in this sort of over-the-top way. It comes off as self-serving. It comes off as almost performance art. And it also comes off very blatant to everyone that if this was John laying there, that in many ways, we don't believe Gabriel would be behaving that way. So the question we're going to ask ourselves, which is two questions really. One is, how does someone living in this environment find themselves? How does John, in a world where he feels like everything he does is rooted in sin, is wrong, how does someone remove themselves either from that situation to find clarity, or within that situation, find a space to grow and develop into the person that they want to be versus who they're being told to be? And lastly, the big question we're going to ask is, what does it mean to be saved? This concept of salvation is important. I think it's something that we need to consider when we think about this text. What does it mean to be saved? And one of the questions we have to ask off of that question is, saved from what? And what does that mean in different societies? What does it mean for different cultures? The concept of being saved and whose decision is ultimately at the end of this deciding what is worth being saved from and what is being saved look like. For John Grimes in this story, there's a lot to consider. There's a lot to think about. But is there a path for salvation for John? And if there isn't, then how do you avoid a life that seems completely lost, damaged, and impacted in a negative way. We have to think about that. Because I don't think that necessarily is the answer. There is a path to finding himself, but it might be in a very unconventional way.